Now, we have talked about over the many programs in the past how there are different disciplines that can be done in order to enhance our upudhiya. Most recently, we had been talking about how, you know, we should gauge ourselves, how we need to take ourselves into consideration, take our conditions into consideration, and we should gradually increase our ascetic austerities, our zuhud when it comes to materialistic wealth and materialistic worldly belongings. And so there are a great many different things, whether it is controlling our anger, paying attention and focusing during our ubudiyya, our different forms of worship and obedience to Allah, and try our best to gradually increase the amount of recommended things that we do. Of course, while keeping in mind that we cannot sacrifice the wajib, the obligatory, for the recommended, the mustahab. There are also different types of methods of self-control that must be done. Of course, regarding the haram things, the prohibited things, and of course regarding the wajibat, the obligatory things, and how we need to constantly be aware of ourselves. Now, what happens when we do all these different disciplines? Of course, there is one end result, which I will talk about in the next segment of our program. But in this segment of the program, I think it is suffice to say that there are many end results when it comes to these different disciplines that done, of course, with sincerity, with a focus, with good intention. Of course, the intention which is to not only satisfy the Almighty Allah, to gain the satisfaction of the Almighty Allah, but also to gain the nearness of the Almighty Allah. And so I think it suffices for this segment that there are a great many disciplines that can be done in order to enhance our ubudiyya, and of course there are a great very many results that come out from these disciplines. One very special one we will talk about in the next segment.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Well, organization in Islam, in the words of Imam Musa Sa'd.
And if we wish to reach achievements in our life, we need to be orderly. This principle teaches us to act in order in everything and every aspect of our life, in our domestic life, financial life, and educational life. In responding to people, in our interaction with friends, in gaining spirituality, in preaching and disseminating, and in everything we handle in any way. Otherwise, we move towards destruction and we become useless. This is just the example of a person who, in a tropical and hot climate, is wearing wool and is not ready to face this hot weather, or to wear thin clothes in cold weather, or to begin swimming with regular clothes, or to swim against the current. The whole world is based on truth, justice, and order. anyone who acts disorderly will gain nothing. And there is no doubt about it. This matter could be deducted from many verses in the Quran. For example, verse 21 of Surah Al-Hijr, in which we read, "And we do not send it down except in a known measure." Or verse 19 of the same surah, stating, "And we grew in it every kind of balanced thing." The fact that this universe is based on order and everything is balanced could be found in dozens of verses, warning humans that this world is based upon order and organization. The wind, climate, the sun, rain, waves in the sea, seasonal winds, day and night being short or long, everything is orderly. And O human, if you wish to be successful and to take advantage of your life in this world, you need to adapt with the order of the universe. This is what we find in the Quran. Now, if someone claims that disorder is better than order, I believe it is against the Quran.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were talking about the different disciplines that we have spoken about in the very different and various programs over the past. And we were talking about how these disciplines have an end result. And what is that end result? Now, we did want to focus in this segment of the program on that one end result. Now, of course, these various disciplines and this zuhud and this control of the carnal self, whether it is anger or it is physical desires, or it is jealousy or greed, or riya, showing off, which are these kind of spiritual values that we must have or we must not have, bravery and courage. And also we talked about different disciplines such as focusing on our sincerity, focusing on our niya, our intention, focusing during our different forms of ubudiyya. And of course, we talked about living a simple lifestyle, eating simply, thinking before we speak, and all these different facets and these different aspects of ubudiyya. Over the different sessions, we also talked about how ubudiyya is not limited to just daily prayers or du'as. Matter of fact, everything that we do for the sake of Allah, on the path of Allah, for the satisfaction of Allah, and of course for the nearness of Allah, is considered ubudiyya. Now, all of these different disciplines, what do they do? Well, eventually, when you discipline the self and the soul and the heart and the mind and the physical body, gradually the forces of nature and the forces of the carnal self are subdued and subjugated, meaning you are able to control and overcome your anger. You are able to not become greedy. You are able to not become jealous. On the other hand, you become courageous. You become honorable, right? You become truthful. You become sincere. On the other hand, you also break away from the chains of the material world. Your soul becomes stronger, right? So what happens is all these different forces of the materialistic realm are subjugated under the majesty and the greatness of the soul and the spiritual realm. Allahu Akbar. This, dear friends, is the, or at least one of the end results, if not the end result, this attaining and becoming the perfect human being, the insan al-kamil, as it is said in Arabic. This is the result of our very different and multiple and various disciplines in order to enhance, strengthen, and perfect our servitude, our obedience, and our worship to Allah, our ubudiyyah.
Allah is the unique Arabic name for the one true God. He is the only one worthy of worship, with no rivals, equals, or partners. Allah is not like His creation, as nothing shares His divine essence and attributes, such as being the Creator, the Provider, the Most Merciful, the All-Powerful, the Most Just, the All-Wise, and the All-Knowing. Allah is without partner or equal in His authority and actions. The world was created by Allah's command alone. He runs the world and controls it all alone. Muslims believe that Allah is one, indivisible, and unequal in His divinity and knowledge. He does not have any ancestors, nor does He have descendants, and He is without wife, partner, or offspring. None came before Him, and He is in no need of any angel, prophet, or saint. Of all the sins committed by His creation, none is greater than the act of shirk, which is the Arabic word for associating partners with Allah. In the Islamic tradition, Allah has 99 names, which include the most loving, the friend, the most kind, and the most powerful. Allah can be translated in English language as the one and only God.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The second Caspian Economic Forum has been held in Moscow. During the event, issues including developing trade and economic cooperation, interaction in the field of ecology, energy, transport, and logistics were discussed. Delegations from the Caspian five literal states, namely Russia, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Iran, and Azerbaijan, were present at the event.
The countries of the Caspian region will have to work in the current turbulent conditions of the global economy and geostrategic tensions. The West is putting increased increasing pressure on other countries in an attempt to maintain the existing world order.
The Caspian region possesses a significant part of the world's gas and oil reserves. It is of high significance, especially at a time when the whole world is facing an unprecedented energy crisis. The Iranian authorities came up with a new proposal to address those issues.
In order to unify and harmonize tariffs for rail, road and sea transportation, expanding trade and economic cooperation, we propose to establish a committee for cooperation in the field of transport, transit and customs business.
The Islamic Republic, given its geographical location, has very good opportunities to conduct operations in the oil and gas sector, as well as providing energy supplies to other regions. Iran has stressed the need to accelerate the unification of the country's electric power networks with those of the Caspian states.
The main purpose of this forum is boosting the economy of regional countries and to enable the Caspian states to use their opportunities to develop trade and economic cooperation, culture and tourism. Also, everyone should not only use the opportunities of the Caspian Sea, but also protect it. We are actively working in the development of the North-South Transport Corridor. The shipping lines of the Islamic Republic of Iran have allocated 300 containers for the transportation of goods to Russia.
Apart from what was said and proposed at the event, the forum also had good news for the member states. Cruise shipping on the Caspian Sea is set to begin in 2023 for the first time in history.
More than 1,000 delegates from the five Caspian Sea littoral states, as well as Belarus, Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan, have taken part in the forum. In the meeting, the participants agreed to adopt decisions to enhance all-out cooperation among countries in the Caspian region. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
The battered village of Golmovsky. The front line is only 100 meters away. There is a deadly tension here as the streets are almost deserted.
And there are a few people on the streets here picking up humanitarian supplies. I've tried to speak to some of them, but they just shake their head and say, I'd like to speak to you, but we just need to rush home because it's too dangerous here. There's shelling at any moment. They can be hit.
In some relative shelter, this man would speak to me.
Are you concerned about Ukrainian advances to the north of here?
No, I don't think they will come here. Everyone will rise up and won't let them. The people here have nowhere else to go. They couldn't beat us when there were only a few of us, and now Russia supports us.
And what do you think of the Ukrainians and the Ukrainian military?
They are not human. They know perfectly well where they shell. The square here is full of craters. Women were killed just over there while working. They know what they target.
It is mostly the elderly who remain in this town. They have nowhere else to go and so are stranded in the middle of an artillery duel between the opposing armies. The boom of outgoing fire, a pro-Russian artillery piece, can't be far from the village. This man tells me he's 76 years old. He fears the coming winter as his windows have been smashed by a blast. He also blames the Ukrainians for the war and says they were sent here by the Americans and the Europeans. We head to the neighboring village of Zaitsevo. It was fully taken by pro-Russian forces a couple of weeks ago.
The front line's a couple of hundred meters away from here. It's understandably a ghost town at the moment. Very few civilians are here. Now, Barmut, a major settlement, isn't too far to the north of here. The Russians, or the pro-Russians, have been trying to take that settlement for months now. And just further to the north of that is Lyman, where the Ukrainian army has had some major successes in the last few days.
The situation is unstable. As you know, Zaitsevo is finally completely liberated. All its parts are now under our control. I think being here today, you'll hear that it's quite loud at the front lines. Artillery, both ours and the enemy's, are working. It's still early to relax.
Are you concerned about the Ukrainian advances to the north?
The north of our republic is a bit far from us. In our direction, it's only our forces that are moving forward. What's going on there decides nothing for us.
Amongst the deadly tension of this village, the incongruous site of a rose garden, it houses a monument to civilians killed by Ukrainian shelling. It was built 18 months before the Russians sent their army across the border in February. A reminder that Ukraine has been bombing pro-Russian areas here for 8 years.
I lived and worked here in the village and saw what's going on. I can tell you there is nobody here, including me, who would agree to any compromise. We have suffered so much during this time that hardly anything can make peace between us.
With peace talks unlikely anytime soon, frontline positions are fluctuating across hundreds of kilometers of Ukraine. Both sides will want to gain as much territory as possible before the winter comes, making advances more difficult. Jenny Miller, Donbass.
New jobs data in the United States showed a collapse of 1.1 million job openings, the biggest one-month crash ever outside of the COVID lockdown. It's also the first increase in the unemployment rate since April 2020, and that has many so-called recession deniers being forced to reconsider. The United States has had two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth, which is the standard definition of economic recession. However, in an effort to avoid the negative press the recession label receives, the administration of President Joe Biden claimed that a stable unemployment rate meant that the U.S. was not in a recession. That's no longer possible. Due to the so-called Uberization of the United States economy, the official data has long been accused of falsely portraying a rosy picture. The national unemployment rate is 4%, but many say the jobs available are part-time or lack crucial benefits like health care or are poorly paid despite the current record inflation.
People looking for benefits, they want to work from home. People are not settling like they used to. It's just a matter of, I don't want to say laziness, but I think people are just, they're trying to get the best that they want, and companies are trying to hold steady and their wages, and they're not willing to pay as much because costs are going up for them as well.
Amid the backfiring of Western sanctions on Russia, many businesses have responded by cutting job listings, slowing the hiring process, and may begin mass layoffs.
Now we've got the threat of recession, so some employers are cutting back on their hiring. My son-in-law just had to fire several people he had who were hiring people. So they're cutting back on their hiring process based on a precautionary measure, thinking there might be a recession.
The widespread perception is that America's central bank is forcing a recession to reduce inflation, even if that means throwing millions out of work, out of their homes, and guts pensions, which are usually based on the stock market. The drop in jobs is the latest piece of data which shows a dangerously worsening economic situation for the average American. Wages are losing ground to inflation at a record pace, and an economically chaotic October could translate into a painful holiday season for many. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Thousands of Palestinians have rallied in the blockaded Gaza Strip to mark the 35th anniversary of the outset of the Islamic Jihad movement. People from all walks of life joined to show their support. The Islamic Jihad movement is highly respected by all Palestinian factions and has always been a uniting factor among them. The movement was founded by the late Dr. Fathi Shaqaqi, who was inspired by the Iranian Revolution and the teachings of the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini.
Today we pay tribute to our founder Fathi Shaqaqi and all the martyrs. Our path is a very long one and paved by the blood of martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the sake of Islam and for the sake of Al-Quds.
Ziad Al-Nakhala, the Secretary General of Islamic Jihad, addressed the attendees via satellite link. During his speech, Al-Nakhala stressed the unity among all Palestinian factions and praised the axis of resistance against the Israeli regime.
Gaza is part of the axis of resistance, and this rally stresses that armed resistance is the key to the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. People attending this event are affirming their allegiance to the resistance and to the Islamic Jihad movement.
The Islamic Jihad movement and its leaders remain blacklisted by the European Union and the United States for refusing to recognize the Israeli regime.
We are all here to support the resistance against the Zionist regime.
Our people are sending a strong message to the whole world today about their unwavering support for the resistance. We will continue our struggle until the liberation of Al-Quds.
Islamic Jihad supporters want the Israeli regime to know that their movement is a force to be reckoned with.
35 years on, the popularity of the Islamic Jihad movement continues to grow due to the movement's strict adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli regime. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
British police have released images of individuals they want to identify in connection with the recent anti-Iran riots opposite Iran's embassy in London. The London Metropolitan Police have already admitted that five officers were seriously injured during clashes with demonstrators on September the 25th. The protesters claimed to support Iranian woman Marza Amini, who collapsed at a police station in Tehran on September the 16th. A spokesperson for the Met said,
"We won't tolerate members of the public or officers who are doing all they can to maintain and regain order being injured in any circumstances. And we are now doing everything we can to make sure those who committed the violent offences are brought to justice."
Police are now guarding the embassy and consulate building, but other sites remain fearful of future attacks too. The Islamic Centre of England in Maida Vale was also targeted in the recent riots.
There's been so many cases where these so-called Iranians, these, you know, pro-Iranians have come and they've ripped off women's hijabs and they've beat up little girls and they've smashed in people's heads. It's just ridiculous.
The recent protests saw a hodgepodge of rival ideologies and dissident groups banding together. Many of these groups have a history of conducting violent attacks against Iranian expats living in the West. We witnessed supporters of the anti-Iran terrorist group, the MKO, and former Shah dictatorship supporters verbally and physically assaulting Iranians attempting to vote in London back in June 2021.
I heard a rock hit the ground. I didn't look back because I was shaking at that time as well. And it hit my trainer, a bit of it. And then they're calling names. One of them said to me, and funnily enough, the policeman was there, but obviously you couldn't understand Farsi. He was telling me if I had a knife, I would cut you in pieces right here, right now.
Calm has returned to London streets for the time being. However, many of the dissident groups which took part in the recent riots remain active and at large, acting as opportunists, willing to jump on any opportunity to harass ordinary Iranian expats and seemingly anyone else who stands in their way. Robert Carter, London.
On Wednesday, Italy's largest retailers association, Confcommercio, warned that over 120,000 small businesses risk shutting down in the first half of 2023. The association said firms are squeezed by the cost of living and skyrocketing energy prices. The president of Confcommercio, Carlo Sangalli, urged the government to do more to shield small and medium entrepreneurs, as the situation for many is now very critical.
There is the risk of a high number of business closures in the coming 9 months. Some small firms will simply find it more convenient to suspend their activity rather than losing 200 to 300 euros a day. Having said that, Italy will soon face a mild recession, which frankly is not as worrying as the media depict it.
Last month, Italy's outgoing government approved an aid package worth some 14 billion euros in an attempt to shield firms and families from surging energy costs. The measure came on top of over 50 billion euros already budgeted since January to soften the energy crisis in the country. However, the aid seems to be insufficient as an increasing number of businesses are struggling to stay afloat.
Everything costs at least 20% more. Energy prices keep soaring and it is very hard to keep going. We need help. The government must do something.
I cannot afford paying expenses for my family. I have four dependent children. They're all unemployed. Bills keep going up. How do we cope?
According to Confcommercio, more than 370,000 jobs are at risk as a result of the energy crisis. Meanwhile, energy giant Eni announced that gas supplies to Italy from Russia have resumed after 4 days. Russia's state-controlled Gazprom cut off gas supplies to Italy on Saturday, citing a problem linked to regulatory changes in Austria. Italy's national energy regulator, ARERA, warned last week that prices would climb by almost 60% by the end of the year, but experts argue that its estimate was optimistic. Bills have risen by 93% in Italy over the past 2 years, and the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, together with the damage recently sustained by Nord Stream pipelines, is likely to push costs even higher. Max Civili, Rome.
Back on October 3, 2015, this Doctors Without Borders hospital in Kunduz was reduced to rubble after being hit by a U.S. deadly airstrike. 211 shells were fired in the strike, lasting almost 1 hour. The charity hospital later announced that 42 civilians, including staffers and patients, were killed, and dozens of others were wounded.
Throughout the NATO coalition presence in Afghanistan, there were a lot of blind airstrikes and rights violations against Afghan civilians, especially by American air forces. The 2015 attack on Kunduz Charity Hospital was one of those atrocities and the biggest of its kind. As I remember, it was so deadly and devastating. Hospitals in war zones are protected under the 4th Geneva Convention, and attacks on them should be tried as a war crime.
After initially denying the building being targeted, the U.S. eventually claimed responsibility for the airstrikes, justifying that it had been a serious and tragic mistake.
Independently and impartially.
The MSF called it a breach of international humanitarian law and a war crime, demanding for an independent probe. But an independent investigation or trial has never been conducted against the U.S. forces' atrocities.
The MSF and rights bodies believe that the U.S. deadly air raid on Charity Hospital could be prosecuted as a war crime, but the international courts and bodies failed to conduct a trial because they are controlled by arrogant powers. They are funded by those countries and obey them. Besides, the U.S. has never agreed to turn any of their service members over to an outside judicial body. As a result, the case of the Kunduz attack was shot by Washington with a mere discipline of some American personnel, and no one was criminally charged.
Throughout the two-decade U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, there had been more than 13,000 airstrikes conducted by American forces in the country. The U.S. drone war on Afghanistan killed more than 4,000 people, including women and children. The U.S. airstrike on the Charity Hospital in Kunduz is one of the many instances of American forces' atrocities on Afghan soil. People here say the U.S. should be held accountable for crimes it has committed in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Muslims in London were compelled to mobilize outside an Islamic center on Saturday following recent Islamophobic violence by anti-Iran protesters. On Sunday, the 25th of September, London witnessed an outpouring of anti-Muslim attacks as protesters claiming to support Mirza Amini were filmed attacking Shia Muslims commemorating Arba'een and the Iranian Islamic Center of England, following clashes with police outside Iran's embassy.
Last week, our mosque was attacked. Our procession was attacked. People were attacked that weren't even Iranian, had nothing, they didn't know anything about what was going on. And it impedes our freedom of religion in this country.
Protests over the death of Amini, a 22-year-old Iranian woman who fell to the floor at a police station on September the 16th, started shortly after her death was announced. Those protests soon turned into violent riots, with masked people attacking security officers, resorting to vandalism, and desecrating religious sanctities, including hijab burnings. Dissident groups outside of Iran were quick to board the bandwagon, engaging in violent protests throughout Europe, especially in London and Paris.
We've got people not of an Iranian origin, but in fact of multinational origin who've come out here to direct their anger to these people who are loaded with anti-Islamic people, LGBT people, and all elements which are anti-Islam who've come out here to side with an event which has happened in Iran. But really, they don't care about that event.
A police presence remains outside the Islamic Center, that groups are continuing to target the site.
Saturday's demonstration passed by peacefully without any major incidents occurring. However, locals informed me that they remained deeply concerned that future attacks may take place. They also informed me that they were deeply frustrated at the local authorities who failed to protect the community. Robert Carter, London.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The Biden administration has imposed sweeping technology restrictions on China. New rules include measures to exclude China from using semiconductor chips made anywhere in the world with U.S. tools. We look at the world media's coverage of this story. Reuters news agency has more on the story. The Biden administration on Friday, 7th of October, published a sweeping set of export controls, including a measure to cut China off from certain semiconductor chips made anywhere in the world with U.S. tools, vastly expanding its reach in its attempt to slow Beijing's technological and military advancement. The rules, some of which go into effect immediately, build on restrictions sent in letters earlier this year to top toolmakers, KLA Core, Lam Research Core, and Applied Materials Inc., in effect requiring them to halt shipments of equipment to wholly Chinese-owned factories producing advanced logic chips. The raft of measures could amount to the biggest shift in U.S. policy towards shipping technology to China since the 1990s. If effective, they could set China's chip manufacturing industry back years by forcing American and foreign companies that use U.S. technology to cut off support for some of China's leading factories and chip designers. In a briefing with reporters on Thursday, 6th of October, previewing the rules, senior U.S. government officials said many of the rules sought to prevent foreign firms from selling advanced chips to China or supplying Chinese firms with tools to make their own advanced chips. They conceded, however, that they had not yet secured any promises that allied nations will implement similar measures and that discussions with those nations were ongoing. We recognize that the unilateral controls we're putting into place will lose effectiveness over time if other countries don't join us, one U.S. official said. And we risk harming U.S. technology leadership if foreign competitors are not subject to similar controls. The expansion of U.S. powers to control exports to China of electronic chips made with U.S. tools is based on a broadening of the so-called Foreign Direct Product Rule. It was previously expanded to give the U.S. government authority to control exports of chips made overseas to Chinese telecommunications giant Huawei Technologies, and later to stop the flow of semiconductors to Russia. Early on Friday, the United States added China's top memory chip maker, YMTC, and 30 other Chinese firms to a list of companies that U.S. officials cannot inspect, ratcheting up tensions with Beijing and taking aim at a firm that has long troubled the Biden administration. The Washington Post has more on the same story. The Biden administration on Friday, 7th of October, announced its most aggressive measures to date aimed at limiting China's access to advanced computer chips and chip-making equipment, saying that the technology is supporting China's military modernization and even its development of weapons of mass destruction. The Biden administration said it was focusing solely on the semiconductor chips, activities and entities of greatest national security concern in China to minimize harm to the American chip industry, foundational to the U.S. economy, and disruptions to the global supply chain. The move represents a clear flexing of U.S. muscle in its competition with China, with analysts saying it amounts to a new strategy of high-tech containment of China. But officials also acknowledged the effort could backfire on the United States without buy-in from foreign partners and allies. We recognize that the unilateral controls we're putting into place tomorrow will lose effectiveness over time if other countries don't join us, and we risk harming U.S. technology leadership if foreign competitors are not subject to similar controls, said a senior Biden administration official who spoke on condition of anonymity. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan last month said the administration was seeking to shed the old approach of maintaining a relative advantage in key technologies to blowing open as large a lead as possible. The export controls imposed on Russia by the United States and 37 other countries earlier this year showed that such tools can do more than just prevent gains, Jake Sullivan said. Sullivan added, they can be a new strategic asset in the United States and allied toolkit to impose costs on adversaries and even over time degrade their battlefield capabilities. But that collective effort success only underscores the need for similar support from allies with this action, said William Reinsch, a senior U.S. Commerce Department official in the Clinton administration, but now at the Center for Strategic and International Security. William Reinsch added, this won't work unless the affected governments and companies are willing to cooperate. You're always walking a fine line between controlling too much and too little. If you control too much, then you're kneecapping your own guys. their ability to invest in new technologies. The new rules were released by the US Commerce Department on Friday, 7th of October. The Semiconductor Industry Association, which represents nearly all of the US semiconductor industry by revenue and almost two-thirds of non-US chip firms, said in a statement it was assessing the new rules' impact and would work with members to ensure compliance. The British newspaper, The Financial Times, has also covered the same story. The United States has introduced sweeping export controls that will severely complicate efforts by Chinese companies to develop cutting-edge technologies with military applications in one of the toughest actions President Joe Biden has taken against China. The U.S. Commerce Department on Friday, 7th of October, announced restrictions that will make it extremely hard for Chinese companies to obtain or manufacture advanced computer chips and will slow their progress in artificial intelligence. The measures are also designed to make it much tougher for China to develop supercomputers with military applications. The controls mark a new attempt to decouple China from the United States in the cutting-edge technologies. They come days before Chinese President Xi Jinping is expected to seal a third term as leader of China at the 20th National Congress of China. Paul Triolo, a China and technology expert at Albright Stonebridge, a consultancy firm, said the action was a major watershed in U.S.-China relations and in the increasingly intense technology competition between Washington and Beijing. The U.S. has essentially declared war on China's ability to advance the country's use of high-performance computing for economic and security gains, said Paul Triolo. The controls will hit Chinese companies in multiple ways. They will bar U.S. companies from exporting critical chip manufacturing tools to China, which will affect groups such as Semiconductor Manufacturing International Corp, Yangtze Memory Technologies Corp, and Changxin Memory.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Salaamun Alaikum. So welcome to this episode of Lantern. On the continuation of this program, Lantern from IRIB English Radio, we'll listen to an interesting story entitled The Fox Without a Tail. A fox that had been caught in a trap succeeded at last after much painful tugging in getting away, but he had to leave his beautiful bushy tail behind him. For a long time, he kept away from the other foxes, for he knew well enough that they would all make fun of him and crack jokes and laugh behind his back. But it was hard for him to live alone, and at last he thought of a plan that would perhaps help him out of his trouble. He called a meeting of all the foxes, saying that he had something of great importance to tell the tribe. When they were all gathered together, the fox without a tail got up and made a long speech about those foxes who had come to harm because of their tails. This one had been caught by hounds when his tail had become entangled in the hedge. that one had not been able to run fast enough because of the weight of his brush. Besides, it was well known, he said, that men hunt foxes simply for their tails, which they cut off as prizes of the hunt. With such proof of the danger and uselessness of having a tail, said Master Fox, he would advise every fox to cut it off if he valued life and safety. When he had finished talking, an old fox arose and said, smiling, Master Fox, kindly turn around for a moment, and you shall have your answer. When the poor fox without a tail turned around, there arose such a storm of jeers and hooting that he saw how useless it was to try any longer to pursue the foxes to part with their tails. Do not listen to the advice of him who seeks to lower you to his own level.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to Lantern. We are going to talk about the benefits of accepting advices and advising others. And this is, inshallah, is the topic that we shall talk about in brief. Any wise person is in need of advices if the advices are coming from the right source. And these advices can solve lots of problems from any wise person. So any wise person, as much as he is in need of good advices, and he might be able to give advices to others. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that anyone who accepts the advices, he will be saved from the calamities. Again, in another hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that between you and the advices are some curtains of negligence. So it is quite acceptable and natural and, let's say, wise to know that we are in need of advices. But unfortunately, we are, let's actually criticize ourselves first. We usually enjoy giving advices to others most rather than to accept advices. I think we need to work a little bit on ourselves, that we usually see that people, let's say including ourselves, are always good in giving advices. But we have to be careful that we are even more in need of receiving advices. Because, you know, even giving advices has some, prerequisites and some conditions that we need to have them first and to, let's say, to see if we really ourselves are acting upon what we are advising others or no. So it's not recommendable to say something that we ourselves are not acting upon that. So we as an advisor, we have to first know that what we are saying from the accuracy and authenticity of what we are saying. So it requires some studies and to see if what we are saying is based on the, let's say, values and whatever has been accepted by the wise people. So when we see that this advice is coming from a right source, so it will even find its place in the addressee. Second point that we need to know about the advice and the importance of that is that when we are going to give advices, we have to have a pure intention in giving advices. Now, these points that I'm actually talking about is with regard to the times that we are giving some advices to others. So we need to give these advices out of a pure intention. And having such a pure intention requires that we should not consider ourselves higher and lesser prior to others. The third point that we need to have and we need to know and we need to ponder a bit on is that advices are good to be done and said, not in public. I was saying that the person who's going to give advices, it's good to give the advices secretly and not in public, and should not destroy that the addressee's personality. The lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
A believer usually actually hides the problems and the let's say the shortcomings of the person or the addressee, but a hypocrite usually advises others in front of, let's say, other people or in public. So it is recommended that a mu'min, a believer, to advise his brother or sister in his brother and sister in faith secretly and not in public, and not to, as I said earlier, not to destroy his or her personality, and not to give advices in public in front of others. The fourth point with giving advices that I need to mention here is that advices should happen and should be said and should be transferred in kindness and with sort of coziness. It should not be that harsh, you know, if you want to criticize or to advise a person about a certain issue. So if you are expecting a change, we have to be so kind and with good words say the advice that we are going to transfer. But all in all, it seems that majority of people in society are escaping from accepting advices. But as I said, we are usually a little bit, let's say, resistant towards the advices, or we are resisting in front of any criticism that comes to us. So having this capacity and this, let's say, power to accept advices and even criticisms is an art that a believer has it. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ala bi dhikrillahi
tatma'innul qulub. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.